Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And I think I'm still Will Bluewater, OCO Gili, Tahiju, Tahigu. I'm fine. How are you? And tonight we're going to be talking with, if anybody was a charter member of the White Roots of Peace Council, it's Thomas Mills, Thomas O. Mills. It's been, 10 years, since we spoke, and I'm a huge fan of his first book, and he sent me a copy of his second book here recently, along with some Hopi tobacco. We've been enjoying that. Welcome to the program, Thomas.
Oh, thank you for having me. Well, appreciate it.
Oh, we're just tickled to death to catch up with you. And, if you want to, we've got an hour. The time's yours. If you want to just take us on a journey through spirit and maybe put yourself back to the last time we spoke and kind of give folks an overview of what you've learned since.
Well, and back in 1970, I had the opportunity to go up there with my mother to run the Hopi Culture Center when it first opened. And we stayed 4 years. And it was one of the best experiences of my life. I mean, I made a lot of friends. And we, back in those days, there weren't any cell phones or telephones or anything on the reservation. We had one pay phone outside there that everybody used. And whenever there was an emergency, they'd call that, and I'd go find the person that needed help. And
uh-huh.
So I made a lot of good friends, and still have a lot of good friends up there. You know, some things that most people don't talk about there is how long they stay married. I mean, some of them have been married 50, 60 years, and, you know, the way they live and the things they do are just remarkable in my eyes, the way they live their lives. And couldn't be nicer people, so I really appreciate the time I had with them. I tried to grow that tobacco for them. I had a good crop this year. That's why I could send you some. And I don't like seeing them use that store-bought tobacco.
Yeah.
With arsenic in it and all the bad side effects. So I had plenty this year, and it went to all three mesas. And hopefully they got some rain, and it was worthwhile. So I really appreciate the hope. You know, I believe their creation story. I think you can prove it. So that's where I'm from.
Me too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Tim Jones was an archaeologist and ethnologist, and he pointed out that the Hopi and the Cherokee were called the Twin Fires, and when anybody ever, if anybody from those two nations spoke up during like a grand council, everybody shut up. And it's really interesting. Dr. Rogers and I have had some fascinating discussions about Cherokee priesthood and how our story lines up with what happened with the priesthood in the time of Akhenaten. And there was a Deer Clan chief, the Northern Cherokee Nation. His parents told him that when they started digging Egyptian artifacts out of the caves, you know, around Southern Illinois, that it was he was instructed to stand up and proclaim that we did indeed have ancestors, at least some, that came out of Egypt, Middle East, and a lot of refugees went a lot of different directions. And so, go ahead and tell us more.
Well, the Navajo word for the Hopis is the keepers of the ancient traditions. You know, they knew that, you know, the Navajos learned a lot of things from the Hopis when they traveled through there. So, But it's apparent to me when you read their creation story, if you just follow it, it leads you right over to Egypt and right after the Great Flood. And that was the last times the ice caps melted, happening to us right now. You know, we're entering into this fifth age right now, and we're all watching it happen. And my Hopi friends all knew it was coming way back in the 70s, you know. Who would have thought that the ice caps would melt back in the 70s? And who would have thought we'd have wars where we fought with drones and, attacked our enemies with these planes that just shoot through space and blow people up? And, you know, the Hopis talked about all those things in, like, our internet connection. They talked about they could talk across the ocean in seconds. Send the picture and talk to somebody across the ocean in seconds. And that was, they told me those things back in the 70s. You know, so that's before cell phones, you know, before all this technology where you could Google things, and they knew things. They were way ahead of their time. And I think a lot of people heard them and couldn't believe it. They just, you know, couldn't put the thought process together where they could, you know, see what they were saying. But it's all coming to me. you know, I'm always amazed by him. And, I just saw in the paper here the other day, it was well back in August of 16, that 2016, that the scientists found that the Earth took a big shift, abrupt turn towards the east, and now we're drifting almost twice as fast as we were before, almost 7 inches a year. And
really?
they figured out that the cause of it, this was a NASA report, two scientists, it was April 7th of 2016, it's called Study Solves Two Mysteries About Wobbling Earth. And it was caused not by the ice caps melting, but that there was the depletion of water in Eurasia, the Indian continent, and the Caspian Sea. You know, that this small amount of water evaporated over there. It's a big drought, and it actually affected the Earth's water, which the Hopis have been saying for, you know, forever. I mean, you know, they all knew about it from the previous times. So
that's why they built pyramids.
Yes, that's what.
That's what you can tell from the beginning. That's it. Balance the planet, and we got to get it right. And if we don't do it in 8 times, well, nice try.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, yeah, the thing is that they found that researchers say it's because the spin axis is very sensitive, which occur right now around the 45 degree latitude, both north and south. Well, that tells me that a small amount of weight in just the right place has an effect on Earth's spin. You know, and and that why couldn't you correct it with a pyramid? You know, if you knew exactly where to put it, you know, just like balancing a tire, just like we talked about before.
Yeah.
But people won't listen. You try to tell them that it's not the amount of weight of the Earth; it's the amount of weight that is out of balance. The Egyptians used the weight of a feather, you know, to show that amount of weight. That it's a little amount of weight, but you put it in the right place, and just like on a big truck tire, it'll balance it and spin will go correct. You'll get a perfect circle again. And what I've been looking at lately is the moon, you know, over at Chaco Canyon. This gal did a beautiful study. She's been working on it for 30 years. Her name's Anna Sofer, S-O-F-A-E-R. Robert Redford narrated her video. It's called The Mystery of Chaco Canyon. And you can get it through a Southwestern Indian website, and a little bit of the profit actually goes to the Native American tribes. But I'd recommend this video to anybody that is interested in the Earth's wobble and what the Native Americans knew and when they knew it and why they were concerned about it. And they go on this video, and they show you that these ancient sites were not only lined up with the winter solstice, the summer solstice, and the equinox. They were actually lined up with the moon cycles, the 9-year maximum and minimum moon cycles, where the moon goes back and forth. It takes 18 years. And they built these huge 400-room complexes in line with the moon cycles. They took all this information and drew it in a circle and had the shadows that made when the light hits the circle just at the right, you know, during the winter solstice, equinox, it goes through that sphere right in the middle of the moon cycles and shows you exactly where we're supposed to be at this time. And how they knew that. I mean, how could we couldn't do that today? I mean, you just draw a circle and have it up on top of a cliff and have the markings go through that spike just at the right time, at the right place for each moon cycle and each winter, summer, solstice, and the equinox. I mean, in all these villages, if you travel 30 miles away from Chaco Canyon, they all line up. I mean, everything in that whole complex is designed to show us where we're supposed to be and where the moon's supposed to be, you know. And the houses there, if you watch the whole video, you'll can just pick out the pieces you want to hear, but you can't build a fire in any of the rooms. There's no stoves in any, no hearths, no place way to heat those rooms, and there's no water. There's no burial grounds. There's no food source, but you know that they had to be there at least 18 years to get it right, or else somebody could figure that ahead of time, you know. But
yeah.
Nobody lived there. The Hopis didn't, you know, they say the Bow clan built it because it's shaped like a bow and a rattle, which is the Bow clan probably settled there, which, you know, is possible. But whoever lined that up with all those phenomenons, all those things, knew what they were doing. Besides that, if you go over to Hopi and the three villages there line up with Orion's Belt, Chaco Canyon would be serious. So the whole area is a big clock showing us different ages, where we are in the universal cycle of life. And we're getting close to this fifth age we're talking about, you know. So Chaco Canyon, it's called The Mysteries of Chaco Canyon. You'd like it, Will, if you got it. It's a great video. And, you know, Robert Redford stayed there at the Culture Center with me. I cooked his breakfast every day. And
I think I saw it years ago. I think I may have seen it on a History Channel. But, yeah, I remember. Yeah, I've seen it. It's an excellent, excellent video.
Oh, yeah, it's great. And that she took her 30 years to do it. She just happened to be up there by that rock on the winter solstice
yep.
and saw the light shine across. That was just pure coincidental.
Yep.
And it took her breath away, and she's been studying it ever since. So it's worth the money. It's an expensive DVD, but it's around $30 or something. But like I said, some of it will go to the Native Americans. Now, when you talk about these ages and where we're at and the cycle of life, and you know, when you look at the Egyptian Book of the Dead, you know, it's a huge book, you know, all these plates, they call them. But to translate the title of it is the Book of Going Forth by Day. That's the name of the book, the Book of Going Forth by Day, which to me doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's what does that mean? You know, the Book of Going Forth by Day. Well, I think when they translated the word day, they misinterpreted. It's a length of time, but it was an age. So it's the Book of Going into the Fourth Age. You know, that's what those murals in the Book of the Dead really are. It's about the three previous worlds that people died in, that everything was happened, and we're going into this was when we went into this, the fourth world. So it's the Book of Going into the Fourth Age. So that makes more sense to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think if you Google just you know, age and day and see what comes up, you might be surprised that somebody else has thought the same thing. You know, and then you get into the moon, and you know, an age is 2,160 years. And there's no question about that. If you know, that's how long it takes for us to go through the precession to the, you know, 72 years and 1 degree, 2,160. So the moon, the diameter of the moon is 2,159. And I think that's probably a miscalculation. I bet you it's 2,106. You know, I'm thinking the diameter of the moon. The scientists don't know how the moon got there. But these guys at Chaco Canyon, they studied it, knew exactly where it was supposed to be for 18 years, you know, where it was going to be. So, so when you look at the moon, the diameter of it is 2,106. And we know it's drifting away from us at 1 inch a year. So if the way I calculate things is the circle of our life is 25,920 years, because that's 2160 times 12. And I don't mean to get into a bunch of figures here for you, but if it's drifting away from us at 1 inch a year, and in 25,920 years, that equals 2,160 feet.
Wow.
So the moon is going away from and it controls our wobble and our tides, and the Earth's slowing down. So maybe the solution is to think about bringing the moon back to where it's supposed to be. You know, it's in the King's Chamber, in the hall, in the Great Pyramid. You need to talk. Well, I'm talking a little bit here. I should let you talk.
Oh no. Well, the only thing I was going to say is. The only thing I was going to point out is I was going to ask, are you familiar with the people who teach the Torah say that before the flood, the earth was under the control of the sun, but after the flood, we became under the control of the moon. And that, my friend Robert Three Eagles is a metallurgist, and he's very familiar with elders everywhere out there. He grew up among them, you know, and and his metallurgy work, which he deals with harmonic frequencies and locating minerals. He can locate any mineral anywhere, but because he knows what their frequencies are, but they drift a little bit every day because of the he noticed this effect and put a spreadsheet out discovered that they varied very slightly depending on the phase of the moon, and even has a lot of proprietary knowledge there. He's retired now, but you know, he just built his own nuclear resonance magnetometer, and I mean they've been finding oil with this since the 60s, and they've been using them on. Navy's been using them a long time, and apparently that's what Gene Cernan, in his mission, one of his last missions, he had some kind of a device because he wrote down as he passed over them, and he was interested in hunting treasure and wrecks and stuff, and he wrote down in code latitude and longitudes whenever he got a hit, and a good friend of his. Searched for years, but his son figured it out, and they came out with a special later. But yeah, the moon is definitely in control of a lot of things. I think between the moon and lightning, if we didn't have either one of those, we'd all be dead. Got to have lightning. Got to have the moon.
Well, the you know, the Hopi creation tells you that you know, when Spider Woman was taking care of Earth and getting her to quit wobbling and setting up the North and South Pole. The nephew was putting the planets in gentle order. And today, we still don't know how the moon was created. How come it doesn't spin where it's at? It's always synchronized with our movement. You know, we always see the same face. And the theories are is that it was a giant impact. A Mars-sized planet clipped Earth, but there's no gash in Earth. You know, and that the dust went up there and formed into the moon, or that the Earth and the moon formed at the same time, but neither one of those theories really hold water because we're not made out of the same material as Earth. You know, and then the other one is that the moon was just passing by and our gravity captured, and the items that are floating around in space aren't circular. They're not moons. They're meteors,
right?
They're not round, and so none of those three things actually, fill the bill. I don't think. I tend to think that the nephew put it there, just in the right place. It was exactly where it needed to be. He synchronized it with our spin, and it's drifting away from us. Maybe this is what all these murals and all these things are trying to tell us.
There's all kinds there's all kinds of talk about the moon may have actually been towed into place. And after, I think it was the last Apollo mission, they left a seismometer on the moon. They wanted to get readings of what happened when the lander eventually crashed before they came back in the module. And when it crashed, the moon literally rang like a bell for a long time, indicating it may actually be hollow. And they say the crust is, you know, it's not very deep. It's only about, you know, 6 miles deep, and it's very mysterious.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I started to say there about that, the tomb in the king's chamber in the pyramid. You know, it's in the Secrets of the Great Pyramid by Peter Tompkins on page 266. Here's what he says about that coffer. He says there was just one way to build a coffer so that it would include not only the distance from the Earth to the Sun, the basic astronomical unit, but the weight of the Earth, the weight of the Earth and the Moon, the weight of the Sun in relation to the Earth, the weight of the Sun in relation to the Earth and the Moon, and the weight of the Earth in relation to the Moon, the value of the absolute cube meter, and the polar radius, one half the diameter from pole to pole, of the Earth in terms of an absolute meter. And this is all in that the dimensions of that granite coffer in the King's Chamber. Whoever built that box wanted us to have that information. I mean, there was a reason they did that. I mean, you know, I'm not making this up. I'm reading it to you right out of the book here. Everybody thinks that's a coffin or a. It wasn't. It was an astronomical measurement for us. An astronomical atlas is what he calls it, you know. And,
right.
You know, more study needs to be done there before we get it out of whack here, you know. That's the way I think, anyway.
Exactly.
But there's
exactly.
A lot of
it's, people,
you know, a lot of people to the moon, so. So now,
so what's this?
Talking about, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to. You go ahead and continue with your thought. I thought you were switching gears, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to mention the ages. You know, if this is the fourth world or fourth time, that if you turn back the clock there at the pyramid complex and you use the Sphinx as the marker, which it is, it's a marker on Earth, because we need a place to measure which age we're in. You know, where would you start? You need a point, and you need a date. It'd be the winter solstice at the Sphinx, looking east, you know, and in the first world would have been Gemini, which would have started with the twins, you know, with Spider-Woman and the twins. Well, Gemini would have started the cycle. Taurus would have been the second world, Aries the third. The fourth would be Pisces, and here we are going into Aquarius. And that would have been the series of the constellations we were in under this 25,920-year series. You know, so those same constellations are mapped. They call it the King's Valley, but the Valley of the Kings. You look from above at that, you'll see the twins, you'll see Taurus, you'll see Aries. Just take a transparency of the constellations and lay it over the Valley of the Kings where they found those tombs. And you'll see that that is representing that period of time where we were when they built the pyramids, where they built when we went from age to age into this, the fourth age. So it's all connected. You know, it's all right there in front of us, really.
Fascinating.
But it's
well,
if I could figure this out, anybody could figure it out.
Yeah.
You just have
really
to study. Look, you have to think about
it. So you're in North Carolina now, huh? I mean,
yeah, my grandkids live here. My grandkids live over here.
Oh, I got you. And is that where your family was from originally, or before they? You had.
No. We lived in Arizona.
We lived in Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Windsor.
So, this new book of yours, Stonehenge. If this was east,
mm-hmm.
Tell us. Tell us about why you went in this direction.
Well, because, like the Hopi crazy story says, that very few people will listen to them toward the end times. Nobody will believe them. And that's the case.
Yep.
Nobody listens to Native Americans. You know, everything's a myth or, you know, it's just not, they don't believe them. So what I tried to do was prove it, you know. So I went to these ancient sites, and a friend of mine, we went together and used Google Earth, and you go to a place like Stonehenge, and you get the past locations of the past poles from Hapgood's book, which was written with Albert Einstein. And he mapped where the North Pole used to be, you know, four ages ago. And he plotted that on the Earth and showed you where the North Pole used to be. So if you take Stonehenge and you line it up, you can tell just from your visual of what Stonehenge is, you can see right now it doesn't line up with east. It doesn't line up at all with anything. They keep trying to figure out what it's built for and what it's lined up for. But if you draw a line through it straight east, where east should be, right through those big stone pillars, it'll go right to one and a half of its locations, you know, where the North Pole used to be. And that would set another boundary where the equator used to be. And that's where you find all these other rooms. So you can map and you can look what time period things were built by just looking at the North Pole location, figuring out where north
yeah.
should be. If you know where east is, you know where north is. And, you know, you can find east. So that's what the book is about. You know, like the Avenue of the Dead, if that road points right to one and a half Good's North Pole locations. All those Mayan temples, it looks like they're just random, you know, the pyramid complexes. They all point, and they all show the winter, summer solstice. They're just not, Earth in them are not lined up where they used to be. And that's why they built them out of such large stones. They didn't want anybody to move them. They were trying to tell us that the Earth hasn't always been in this east position, that it's changed. And if you look at the foundations of those temples with 240-ton stones, you can figure out where east you'd be in the east, and then there's north, and there's where the North Pole used to be, you know, 25,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago, and 75,000 years ago. So that's what that book's about. A friend of mine did the cover of the work on it in the back. You know, Dave Riley, he was an architect. He studied with Frank Lloyd Wright. He was half Hopi, half Laguna. I went to school with him all my life. He passed away, but he did the cover in the back for me, you know.
It was a fascinating read. It's just amazing.
Oh, well, thanks, Will. You know, I'm glad you understand it. A lot of people can't understand.
Oh, yeah.
Hand around. I mean, you start talking
Oh, yeah, some people, their eyes just glaze over. Well, I know what you mean. You're getting some attention. I've seen you on television a time or two. Tell us a little bit about that.
They got me on that ancient alien thing there for a while, twice or three times. But each time I went down there, and I went to a lot of expense, built murals and pictures of all the murals, drew maps of everything, and took it to them, talked to them for an hour. So I'd show them the whole Hopi creation story, and they would pick out maybe two sentences and put it on the show.
Yeah.
So, that was enough. You know, I said, that's it. I'm not going back. I'm done. You know, they just use what they want to use. You know.
Yeah. Isn't that awful?
And I wasn't. I'm not one of those guys that will say extraterrestrials and ancient aliens. Because I believe like the Hopi. These guys that came here were like us. I mean, they were from another planet. They were traveling through space, and they found Earth just something like we might do when we run out of resources here. Or you know, if you know, you it, it You know, if he had a female figure with him and his nephew, that tells me he had a nephew. He had to have a wife and a daughter, and she had to marry somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe everything they've ever told me has come true. So, you know, I can't.
Probably his sisters. Traditionally, as far as line of succession, at least one of the Cherokees, if a most beloved man, the next one in line wouldn't be his own kid, but would be the eldest son of his eldest sister. So, yeah, it was probably he himself and sister. Interesting. Yeah, maybe. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, there's a book about old. It's called Old Arriving. And a guy wrote it way back in the 1930s, and you might like that if you. It's a little expensive too, but it's a good book if you. You know, he lived at Arrive and mapped out every clan, said who was married to who, and you know, he was. He named Hopi children. They took him in, and so he was a good guy. You know. It affected him a lot. But yeah, it's fun reading. I can read ink. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. And of course, we haven't had Mark. It's too bad we didn't get Mark Borcherding on the program. He had to beg off for the summer, and because of church activities, and who knows what he's doing. If he's smart, he's prepping. But he's got telephone contact with one of the Hopi elders. I've been trying to get him on the program like forever, and may yet.
Yeah.
And
had a good
friend gave me Arva Looking Horse's phone number and got him on speed dial, trying to get up the guts to give him a call. But
yeah.
Hey, it's been an interesting program, you know, and but it's I can't
what?
Remember what to.
You've been doing this a long time.
I can't remember what year we did you.
Neither can I.
Yeah, but, it's at least I would say it's been about 10 years, and fascinating. And tell us. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Most of the elders up there now have been through our school system. You know, there's only a few left that haven't been through the school system. And, like when I told you I grew up in Winslow, there was an Indian school in Winslow, and, you know, there was no high school on the reservation. So it's kind of like when we go to college, except they went to high school, left home.
Right.
You know, and had to go miles away. There was one in Pasadena, California, one down on Indian School Road in Phoenix. And, you know, just think if you were a high school kid and starting your freshman year and you had to move and live in a dorm, and they were used to going into kivas and taking part in farming and their culture activities. And all of a sudden somebody comes and picks you up and takes you, you know, to California. I mean, a lot of kids committed suicide, a lot of drug addiction, a lot of, there's people that prey on them, you know, that, you know, kids
yeah.
like that in a strange town, you know. But now they have a high school out there, so that's just wonderful, you know. I mean, they're trying to keep the traditions going. Bob and Verma up there, they've got a school. They're teaching. They have Hopis come in, the elders, and teach anybody that wants to come in how to weave and how to make baskets and pottery and jewelry. And they're trying to help keep this thing going, because the worst thing that ever happened out there was the TVs. I mean, every house has a TV going full blast 24 hours a day, and it's just. I lived up there. There was no TVs, and you could go over there and sit in somebody's home, and the kids would be running around dancing and singing, and you know, it was just everybody's laughing and eating. And now you go in and they don't turn the TV down, and it's not the same. You know, they're trying to act like the TV people. You know, they want to be like the, you know, what they see on TV. They had
same thing. And a lot of the kids got involved with, started shaving their heads, getting involved with the Hispanic and Navajo kids that were involved in crime. You know, the same exact thing happened in Tibet with China bringing in cable TV and completely destroyed their culture within a generation.
Yep. Yeah. I've seen it happen.
And which is what China wants. Now, we don't necessarily want that, but like China, but, you know, but what the U.S. wants, they pretty much imposed citizenship on American Indians in 1924, and they basically passed an act that said that, okay, unless we hear back from you, unless you object, you know, by act of your local government, you and your people will become American citizens. And like the Navajos didn't. There was some other notable exceptions, but I firmly believe, well, it only makes sense that basically if it wasn't for the code talkers from all the Southwest and even some, you know, other tribes during World War I, we would have won that, and we would have gotten our butts kicked in the Pacific. So, and also have it on good authority from Captain D.L. Pappy Hicks, who was he led the Special Forces secret war in Laos, and they didn't even declassify any of those decorations until Clinton was president, and now we're finally getting our first Medal of Honor winner from Laos, different corner of the war, but still, you know, they knew they were good fighters, and they knew how to walk and be quiet and all these skills. And Pappy Hicks said, he said, let me tell you something, Otter. He said, the government knows who the Indians are. He says, they know your genealogy. And he said, they probably know it better than you do. And he said, back in his days, the only people that got into special forces in the late 50s and 60s were mixed blood Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, kinds of, you know.
Yeah, well, the Hopis were code talkers, too. You know, that's how they got the gold, where they started making the overlay silver, you know. One of their traditions, when the code talkers came back, they funded that. You know, Fred Cabote started it up there. He was a good friend of mine. You know, his son, Mike, was a real good friend of mine. So, they sponsored the guild up there. So that was good because they not only sold the silverwork, but they sold Kachina dolls and baskets and kept the economy going up there a little. You know, and it was a Hope that owned it, and you know, worked out great. You know, it was a good program. It's sitting empty right now, so. Yeah.
Interesting. I was so sad to see that Hopi, the young lady a few years ago, was part of the convoy. And I guess the only survivor was the young lady from West Virginia. But I was really sad to see that, and especially in view of what the Hopi were taught anciently. And because I know Thomas Bunyakya, he refused to be drafted, and he spent the duration in prison.
To Alcatraz. They sent a lot of Hopis to Alcatraz, and they built a lot of gardens over there on the solid rock. They had to plant their corn. They had things growing out there.
And that's wow. Yeah, it's their agricultural methods are unbelievable. They're really unbelievable people. And very, very clearly from, you know, just because of their gifts of prophecy, they have some kind of bloodline, and that seems to be a little bit more dialed in and wired into Creator.
Well, they were here first. That's what you have to keep reminding yourself. You know, when the Navajos showed up, that was 800 years after the Hopis. You know, the Navajos came down from the north, and the Hopis came up from the south and built the Pueblos. Well, Navajos live in Hogan. And whenever the Navajos found an ancient ruin, you know, there was ruins by then, like over in Black Mesa, and, you know, they would call them the Anasazi. They were Anasazi, the ancient ones, you know. Well, the Hopi word for them is the people that could live without water, the ancient Hopi people that could live without water. And the Navajo name stuck for some reason. Everybody says everything's Anasazi, which is the enemy, you know, the ancient enemy, the ancient. And the Hopis hate that word, Anasazi. They don't even know who the Anasazi were. You know, there wasn't any of them. It was a made-up, you know. I'm writing an article for the little Hopi paper about it right now, so I'm going to.
Well, what do you think about you know, Robert Three Eagles firmly believes, because he's located hundreds of burials of red haired giants, and he's you know, he's taken I've seen a lot of photographs from the expeditions. He grew up in Moab as a kid, and to survive. You know, they go back before when it was still legal. You know, they would dig out stuff. They actually found a skull with a double row of teeth. That's really interesting, because now you're talking about Nephilim, Gibberim. The reason why gibberish, you know, comes from the special kind of sounds that there were two regiments of bodyguard for King David, and the mighty men of renown were the Gibberim, and mighty people. But it really makes me wonder if the reason why they built up on the cliffs was either to stay up above where the red haired giants, they're a fact, they exist also, and because it hasn't been that long ago that the last one was killed.
Yeah, but
what do you think?
If you look, I think that most of those sites were built just like the Hopi villages. They were in line with constellations. It's where the Guardian Odin was built. He didn't care if there was a cliff there or a canyon or a it's a pinpointed exactly where the star in Orion's belt is, or the star. Yeah. See, like, now when you look where the spear, if the lion had a spear, it would be pointing right at Supai, which is down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, and the Havasupai live there. And that's the navel, you know, and that's that all fits together with when Orion's spear hits the bull, which is that star Adrian, the heart of the bull. That's when we're going to go enter into this fifth cycle. So that's why I think these long-haired red guys you're talking about, red-headed people, I think there was some people from each race might have gone. I know they found some over in China that looked like Irish people or something, a little family they found buried over there that didn't survive, or somebody in the tribe that lived there did away with them. But, you know, people travel. People go places, you know. There's always a guy that'll take off. And when you're traveling, like when they made their trip across the ocean coming here after the flood, you know, some of them stopped there at Hawaii, Tonga, maybe Easter Island if they went that far south. You know, and there's always somebody, and some guy said, "Hey, I've had enough. I'm staying here," you know. And that's where the Hawaiian came from. There's hieroglyphs in Hawaii, you know, the water plan signatures there. I've seen them. I went there and looked, and,
you know, there's hieroglyphs all over where they made their clan journeys and when they traveled after the flood. So, and there was two times before that. So, so that's what I think about it. I think they built those villages. If you look at like where Zuni is, it fits right in with the constellation of the Kansas Major, the dog constellation.
Dog Star.
With Chaco Canyon would be right there in the middle of it. You know, so, but each one of them, you know, is pinpointed by where that guardian wanted them to live. You know, there's no reason for anybody to live at Chaco Canyon. You know, it's cold in the winter and it's hot in the summer, and there's no running water. No food, there's no trees, you're in the desert. I mean, there's no reason except that it's right where Cyrus would be, you know.
Well, you know, you think maybe they just migrated in there, you know, like the San Luis Valley Indians went up there for ceremonial use, but they didn't. They left before nightfall, and so you think maybe when the weather was a little cooler, say in the spring, you know, in the solstices or rather the equinox period, you think maybe they went in there when the weather was good and did their thing, because there's a lot of apartments there, and if the weather was.
You can't live in them, Will. You can't live in those apartments, I'm telling you. You can't build a fire in them. There's no running water.
Huh.
There's no burial ground. They
real mystery.
Well, to me it's not. I think the guardians lived there, and they plotted, they balanced the earth here. You know, they were, when you look at that video, you realize they were, these complexes are 30 and 40 miles apart, over mountains, and they line up exactly with the winter, summer, solstice, the equinox. I mean, you can guess what they were, but the reality is somebody built them that knew what they were doing with the winter, summer, and summer equinox. They were lining them up, letting us know where the perfect alignment was, where we ought to be.
Wow. Well, tell the.
That's what I. I could be wrong. You know, I'm just talking.
They're cutting off our stream here about 5 minutes. So, now I've got a link to your website on ancientorigins.net, and people can get a hold of you through that, and you know, from there they can buy your books, and which I highly recommend. Everybody ought to have a copy of The Truth. It's just wow, you know. But
I'm not an author, you know, Will. I'm not an author. There's a lot of misspelling, and
me too.
I did it. I worked for the railroad for 30 years, and I just had to write that book, and that's what I did. But when I first did it, the first guy I sent a copy to was Al Gore. He was the vice president back then. It was 1998, and. I sent him a copy. Of course, he never acknowledged getting it or anything, but all of a sudden he got really interested in the, you know, in the melting ice caps, you know. So maybe I hit one guy.
Wow.
I don't know.
Wow. Wow, it's amazing.
But
know.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't care if anybody believes me or not, you know, but I did it. I thought that everybody would be interested, you know. I sent a copy to that the crazy guy over in Egypt. You know, the guy was running around digging up tombs and saying, I sent a copy to him. He told me, don't ever send me anything else. Don't ever email me. Don't talk to me. So I said, okay. And I have talked to him since.
You talking about Zahi Hawass?
Yeah, that guy, yeah.
That's interesting, you know, because... Robert Three Eagles took an artifact that he found in the Southwest, and you know, they were good friends, and he took it over there and showed it to him, and he said, Dr. Hawass, you know, where do you think this artifact is from? And Hawass says, oh, could only be Egypt, you know. And he was just, and that may be, I mean, he was just, it blew his mind. So that may be a byproduct of that encounter. But, well, listen, we got to run.
Yeah.
And
okay. All right,
we're
going to
appreciate
show,
you being
bro.
On.
Good luck.
Hey, thank you so much. Good night, everybody.
Good luck in the future.
Bye-bye now.
Good luck in the future. All
thanks.
Right,
hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. And you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
They have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Yeah. friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away is a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, the mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you